Hey everybody, it's Charles from HumbleMechanic.com. Today I'm taking your questions on dropping screws, oil pressure, lights, tools, and more. This is episode 218 of the Humble Mechanic Podcast. If you want to get a question on a show like this, email me, charles@humblemechanic.com. Put question for Charles in the subject. Ask that question right at the top. Give me some space, then give me all the details of the question so I actually know what the question is. Also, if you don't see a question on a show like this, be sure to check out the quick videos playlist on YouTube. In addition to that, there are audio-only versions of the show. You can check it out on Google, Stitcher, and of course on iTunes, or listen over on the blog at humblemechanic.com. All right, let's talk about the sponsor of the day, which is CRP Automotive. CRP deals in a ton of OE maintenance and repair parts, timing belt kits, suspension components, and even fluids. In fact, they make the factory DSG fluid for Volkswagen and Audi. So check them out at crpautomotive.com. Don't forget, if you want exclusive content, discounts you can't get anywhere else through places like Black Forest, Adams Polishes, Eastwood, Kerma TDI, S&P Automotive, and more, check out the crew membership program. It's a great way to help support the show. More importantly, get yourself some awesome discounts that you guys can't find anywhere else. As always, there's links to that down in the description, as well as all the rest of the stuff that we talk about during these episodes. So with that wrapped up, let's get into your questions. First one comes from Rooster, which is an awesome name, and that was actually what his email was. It says, I dropped a screw in the heater box. How screwed am I? I wonder if there was a joke intended there. Thanks for that, Rooster. Hey, Charles, my dad recently bought a Mark V Rabbit, and it came with an aftermarket radio. I was swapping it with the OEM radio and putting everything back together, and I accidentally dropped the screw down in the heater box. How screwed am I? Is it easy to get out? Thanks, and keep up the good work. Well, Rooster, the fact that you may or may not be screwed is really cracking me up right now, but let me give you an actual answer. So this kind of depends on what happened, what screw it was, and where did it fall. On the Mark V's, a lot of times when you're doing radio work, you're taking out that front trim piece, you're taking out the diffuser piece that has vents in it up over the top, and then you can get access to the radio. For me, I eventually got to the point where I wasn't taking that top diffuser piece off on the top of the dash. I was just kind of popping it up and then taking the screws out. You can do it that way. It's really, really easy. So if you drop that top screw, it could have easily fallen in a place that's very unhappy. If it were the four radio screws, well, it's probably not one that you dropped. And even if you did, it's not that big of a deal. Really, the only way I would worry about this is if the screw landed in an unhappy place. And an unhappy place is going to cause a couple of things. One, it fell inside the heater box, which I'm trying to picture how that could have happened. And it's not very likely. If it fell inside the heater box, really the thing you have to worry about is it getting trapped in a blend door or a temperature door. If that happens, the door may not close all the way. You can get whistle noises, and you can get a door that's not going to shut. So if you turn on the heat, you might get some cold air passing through it. If that is not where it fell and it fell on top of something, the things we worry about is it getting jammed in, say, the HVAC unit. This is climatronic. It doesn't matter because it's all wires. But if it's the one with the cables that move all around, it can do similar to what it did with the door and jam up in a cable. In addition to that, we have to worry about it landing somewhere and vibrating. This can cause a rattle, which will drive me anyway, and a lot of you guys I know too. It'll drive you bonkers. The thing I would worry about more is that vibrating or rattling against something and actually cutting into the airbox, similar to how our door gets trapped, causing air leaks. These can whistle and be problematic. Or that same scenario, but instead of a heater box, it's falling on a wire, causing a wiring issue. Those would be like the worst possible case and an extreme case at that. I don't think you're going to have any problems. Again, for me, the biggest issue I think you might face is a rattle, or when you turn a corner, you're going to hear that screw bouncing around inside the heater box. But take the radio back out. Take that diffuser piece off if you took that off as well, and try and find it. Get a magnet. Especially one like the bendy kind. I'll put a link in the description if you're not sure what I'm talking about. The bendy kind where you can kind of get it around corners, that works really well in these applications. The ones that purely telescope are okay, but it's nice to get that curvature to get around corners on the heater box. I've done this before, and from a professional standpoint, you got to get the screw out. You can't, one, not put all the screws in on something like that, and two, you can't induce more problems like a dash rattle or potential wiring issue to a customer's car. So we had to get them out. If you're a DIYer and this is your own car, you become infinitely flexible with what you want to do. But man, for the sake of learning, for the sake of punishment and paying attention to not dropping that screw again, I would probably try and fish it out. Plus, then you get the feeling of victory when you actually find it and extract it from the heater box if that happens to be where it fell. While you're looking for this screw, the way I always found that was look for textural differences in what you're looking at. So the heater box is going to be flat, where the screw might have a little bit of sheen to it. You're looking for that change in what you're seeing from flat heater box to shiny screw. I know that doesn't make sense too much, but when you find it, don't take it out right away and shine your light across it and you'll see what I'm talking about. And that's what I always used to try and find screws, bolts, nuts, sockets, and it works really, really well. I was always the dude when someone couldn't find something that they dropped. I was the one that had to come over and try and find it for them, and got pretty good at it over the years. So good luck. I don't think you're that screwed, especially once you find your screw. All right, next one up is from Ben. I have a 04 Passat, got an oil change, thermostat, wiper blades, and some other small stuff. I don't have a dealer near me, so I took it to a shop that I've gained some trust with. Shortly after the repair, I got an oil pressure light that went away. A month later, I kept getting the light on my road trip from Texas to Michigan, or as Ben actually said, Michigan to Texas. After driving 5 hours with the light intermittently going on and off, the engine blew. Could this be a result of the thermostat and oil change? Should I bring it up with the shop, or is it just bad luck? This question, in one form or another, is one I get all the time. I just had work done, now my car's screwed up, and what do I do? So it's a question that I'm going to go much deeper into in a solo video. I had some other questions that revolve around this too, but I wanted to answer Ben's question about his 04 Passat. Oil pressure lights on that vintage of Passat are something I'm very familiar with. We were doing oil services all the time. I'm going to assume this is a 1.8 turbo, you know, called the sludge box, even though they were pretty darn good if you maintain them throughout their life, and that was really the key. A lot of people buying them secondhand had more problems than people that owned them from the get-go. And the earlier vintages were much more of a problem. So you had something done on your car, oil change, thermostat, and whatever else. Right away, it sounded like that oil pressure light came on. The things that we need to know before we point the finger at the shop is, what oil did they use? Did they put the right amount of oil in it? Did they use the right filter? A lot of independent shops that don't specialize in VW Audi end up putting the wrong oil filter in it, which reduces the overall capacity of the engine to hold oil. They'll put the little B on instead of the big B, which is, especially on your 04, again, assuming this is a 1.8 turbo, that engine requires. Maybe they use the wrong oil. Maybe they put 20W50 in it instead of 540 or 1040 or 530, or even really I'd be okay with 030. If they put that in there. So that's important. Did they use the right spec oil as well? We would need to know that before we started pointing the finger. This could easily be the result of a bad oil change. It could be that this engine is sludged up, and this would have happened whether you got the oil change there, at the dealership, didn't get an oil change at all. We don't really know. What I'd want to know now, I mean, the engine's toast, so the repair is the same, right? Rebuild, replace. Odds are you're probably going to be better off replacing it. Get a turbocharger, because if you had oil problems, your turbocharger's probably smoked, as well as oil and oil feed and return lines. And of course, you're going to replace a bunch of other crap along with it too. So we're not worried about what the repair is. We need to know, how could we have prevented this? So it could have easily just been the random happenstance of this service. But what we need to know is, what was the oil level when the oil light started coming on? Maybe they only put 2 quarts of oil in it. Maybe they put a quart in it. We don't know. And there's no way at this point, I don't know if there's a way to know. You know, has the engine already been torn down? What happened? What I would say, and this, Ben, is way too late for you, is what should have happened is, when the light first came on after that oil change, a phone call should have been made immediately to the shop that you got an oil change. In a manner that's not pointing fingers saying, you screwed my car up, in a manner of, hey, look, you guys just did an oil change. My oil pressure light came on. Can you take a quick look at it? You're probably going to get way better results from that type of conversation than calling up screaming at the shop that your oil pressure light's on, because it might not be their fault. It could have just been time on an average to sub-average maintained vehicle that it's just sludged and the pickup's clogged and that was when it decided to get unhappy. Warning lights come on a lot, right? Tire pressure light, coolant level low light, washer fluid light. We're going to be, more lights are coming to our cars in the future. We're not going to get less lights. The oil pressure and the overheat lights are the two that are the vital ones to engine performance. If your oil light is coming on, don't drive the car. Flashing check engine light is another one. Don't drive the car. You need to get it brought to a service facility because it could be something as simple as an oil pressure switch. And it could be something as simple as you're not getting oil pressure up to the top side or to wherever the pressure sender is. It could be a wiring problem, any number of things. At this point, I would call the shop and ask them for your oil change records, see what they used. If they didn't use the right stuff, you know, very likely they might be responsible. But what I'm concerned about is that the car got driven for 5 hours. As a shop, I would have a really hard time paying for that repair. I might assist, but I'd have a really hard time paying for a repair that a light was on, it was flashing, there was an indicator. You never gave me the opportunity to fix something or anything, my mistake or not, when it first came on. So you're probably going to be on your own, whether it was the shop's fault or not at this point anyway. So Ben, I'm sorry for the situation. I love the 04, that generation Passat. That's what I drive. I have an 05. So I know the problems of it, and I know how a lot of customers feel about that car. It's an expensive car to maintain and repair. And yes, there were a lot of sludge issues, mostly revolved around incorrect services or poor service and maintenance. So, dude, good luck. I hope it works out. Let me know. Email me and let me know what ends up happening. But I hope that advice helps you as well as plenty of other people when it comes to a shop, maybe or maybe not, messing up your car. All right, next up is from Nathan. It's about B6 Passat buying advice. Hey, Charles, recently my 2010 B6 Passat wagon was totaled. Bummer, I like that year specifically, B6 Passat. Now I'm on the lookout to replace it. Absolutely love the amount of space the wagon gave. I was able to haul my wife, myself, my kid, car seat, jogging stroller, two dogs, a diaper bag, and all the million other things that parents have to haul around. Not finding a suitable wagon in my area in central Ohio, I'm considering a Tiguan, Touareg, or Golf Sport wagon. Just wanted to see if you had any experience hauling car seats, diaper bags, etc. in any of these cars. I'm open to any other suggestions. Thanks. Keep preaching the cool, calm, and collected mindset, Nathan. Okay, Nathan, what I'm about to say is 100% bias, and it's my opinion, and you guys feel free in the comments to put your opinion about these cars or other wagon solutions for Nathan down in the comments. So I own a B5 Passat, which is a little bit smaller, B5 and a half technically, a little bit smaller than your B6 was, and I love it. The space is perfect. My wife and I, neither one of us are very tall, but we do have a 2.5-year-old daughter that sits in a car seat, so we have her car seat on top of all the other junk that parents have for their kids. We're pretty minimalist, I guess, when it comes to bringing crap for your kids, but there's always junk in the back and cooler and, you know, our crap too. Daughter's potty training now, so there's the car potty thing, which I hate it, but it's better than, you know, dealing with the other side of it. I have also seen a lot of golf wagons, Jetta wagons, two car seats, crap full in the back, and parents completely happy with it. I've also seen that same stuff in Toyota Corollas and Beetles. So you can fit these things in these cars. You don't need a giant SUV to have one kid. Parents have been doing it for longer than they haven't been. So just let me put that out there. Now, when it comes to these three specific ones that you mentioned, the Tiguan, we also have a Tiguan. The Tiguan is considerably smaller than my B5.5 Passat wagon. We leased the Tiguan. I'm excited to give it back because it doesn't have the space that the Passat has. I hate that this newer car that is, it's essentially a Golf, right? It's essentially a raised up Golf. That's it. The Passat has way more room. I think you might struggle with the room in the Tiguan. Before you buy this Tiguan, Passat, Jetta, any car, take your family down there, put the car seat in the car, see how it works for your family. If the salesman doesn't want you to do that, find another dealership or find somewhere else to buy it because they should allow you to put the car, even if you don't buckle it in, set it in the car and try it out. I wish dealerships had car seats that you could take, set in the car and get a feel for what it's like once you load the whole family up. Dealerships, if you start doing that, give me some credit for it. Now, we move on to the Touareg, considerably bigger vehicle than the Tiguan. one that I have a huge affinity for. In fact, when the diesels are affordable and not bonkers prices and start really heavily coming off of the modification, very likely gonna buy one as our next vehicle for the family. Love it. Space is great, features are great, plenty of room, super capable vehicle, but also pretty expensive. Now we move to the Golf Wagon. You're gonna find that the Golf Wagon is a little bit bigger if we go Mark 7 forward, an MQB platform. The Golf 7 is quite a bit bigger than, not quite a bit bigger, but is bigger than the Tiguan. Fits the family much better, but it is still kind of small. Now, you said Tiguan, and I spoke from my experience on the 15 Tiguan like we have, which will be model year 16, 17. They're actually producing that Tiguan as model year 18 from what I understand. I didn't take into account the new Tiguan, the big one, right? That is much bigger. That does take up a lot of the negative that my Tiguan had. I did a whole review on it. I'll link it up right in the card. Check it out and gives you a better fit and feel for what that Tiguan is like. It's not perfect. There's a lot of low speed hesitation and jerkiness that I really didn't care for. But as far as space and fit and finish for your family, I think it's a way better option than the previous generation Tiguan is. So look around, guys, in the comments. Let Nathan know some other options, wagons. You can look at the All Roads, which are beautiful and I love. There's a bit out of my price point for a vehicle. Consider leasing. That'll save you some money. But I hope that helped, Nathan. Good luck. Sorry your Passat got total. Hope everyone was okay. When you buy that new car, dude, let us know what you found and why you picked that specific car. All right, guys, last question of 2017 actually came from Instagram, which I normally don't pull, but I liked this question a lot. It says, hey, Charles, dude, do you think that the Milwaukee half-inch impact is almost unnecessary for removing and installing lugs? Of course, I break the lugs loose with a breaker bar and torque them to spec when done. It would essentially be used for removing lugs quickly. Maybe there's a more cost-friendly option for my use. I do believe in buying quality and buying it right the first time. So, cool question, and I like to incorporate questions about tools. So, tool questions, be sure you guys are sending those in as well. You guys probably know I'm a big Milwaukee Tools fan. Most of the recent DIY videos within the last year and a half or so, that's what I'm using. Big, big fan. And the impacts are awesome. The mid-torque impact is the one I use the most. I just gave away 3 high-torque impacts, by the way. Another reason to follow me on social media if you are a social media-er. So I'm a bit confused on this question, so I'm going to answer the question as it's stated, and then we're going to talk a little bit about tools. If you were following this procedure, breaking them loose with a breaker bar, and looking for something to zip the wheel bolts or lug nuts off, then there probably is something better to use than these Milwaukee impact guns. Like the lower end impacts that are cheaper, the Surge, the ones that are like $120 instead of these $200, $300, $400 tools. And yes, at that point, you would just be zipping them out and zipping them in. If you're a DIYer, that's probably not necessary. As a professional, every second counts. Anything I can do to increase my productivity and efficiency generally and eventually became worth the money that we spent on it. If I can shave 5 minutes off a job, that's 5 minutes I'm being paid more. That's 5 minutes sooner I can get the next job and be ahead on the next job. That's how flat rate works. We stack our jobs on top of each other for good or bad. And yeah, so there would be value for a pro. For you as a DIYer, if you are a DIYer, I don't think that doing that makes sense. Just finish running it out with a ratchet or by hand, take the socket off and spin it out by hand. You're not in that time crunch like we are as professionals. Same thing going back in. Yep, you're gonna be torquing, click, click, or buzz, flash when you put your wheels on. So you don't need that impact for that. It just speeds things up. Now, I don't do that way. If I'm taking wheels off, the impact goes on, the bolts come out, the bolts go back in, and then we hit it with a torque wrench. I'll use a torque stick going back in, and then click, click, buzz, flash for the torque with the torque wrench. So that does save a lot of time because I'm not getting out the breaker bar, breaking them loose, raising the car up, running them out the rest of the way. Running them, you know, it saves a lot of time even just with that. I don't use a breaker bar to break wheel bolts loose unless the wheel bolt doesn't come off. Then I will, but that's a very rare thing, very low percentage. But think about all the other jobs that you're going to be doing. Now, you said half-inch impact, so these are the bigger tools, the more heavy-duty tools. What about suspension work? Bolts in, mostly bolts in. A lot of suspension bolts are coated, so you don't necessarily want to use that going back together. Things like axle bolts, engine mounts, right, suspension components, on and on. There's seats, you run them out with your half-inch impact. There's a lot of other jobs that we're doing beyond just taking wheel lugs and bolts off. That's the most common. That's what you're going to probably use it for the most. But there's plenty of other jobs that we're going to be using those tools for that do save a lot of time, a lot of effort, and you don't have to worry about dragging a cord like you would a pneumatic tool around. I'm a fan of them. If you don't like those and don't use those, that's totally cool. My whole point with this is do what works best for you. I do think there's way more jobs that you're going to do with a half-inch impact than simply taking wheels on and off. Unless you just take wheels on and off, then that's probably all you're going to do. But I just think of how many times I grabbed my impact gun, be it electric, be it pneumatic, and used it over the years. And yes, wheels were the most common, but tons of other things that I used those for, and they worked great. And not just to speed things up, you know, that's less wear on your body, that's less movement on your rotator cuffs, your shoulders, your arms, it's less stress. And yes, of course, you will increase your efficiency in doing these jobs and do them faster, which again, as a professional, so vital. So I love the half inch Milwaukee Impact. Again, I prefer the mid torque over the high torque. It's lighter, it is almost as powerful, but if you're taking off, you know, big truck tires with high wheel bolt torque, you may need the high impact. They just launched like 2 days ago. I just got the one with the one key, which you can program to your cell phone, which I know a lot of you hate, but I'm gonna do a video on that. So not to sell it, like buy what you want. I don't care, whatever works for you. But I think the features are interesting and it's kind of cool how it works. And I wanna share that with you guys. Again, not as a sales pitch, just as something that I think is cool and interesting, and hopefully you guys will too. Maybe it sways your opinion to buy it. Maybe it's you look at it and say, I don't need that crap. I just want to zip, zip and go to town. That's cool too. So yes, I think the Milwaukee half-inch impact is worth it. There are ones that are a little bit more affordable that you can look at too. I have less experience with those. I have more experience with the Milwaukee and Up, Snap-on Matco IR. Those are all great products if you have the budget for them. But you can look at something a little bit less expensive. Ryobi usually falls in that price point. I will never own another Craftsman power tool again in my life, so I won't recommend that to you guys. I've had nothing but problems with those. But when it boils down to the crux of your question, yes, 100%, I think it's worth it. All right, guys, I'm wrapping it up there for the year. Thank you for such a great year. Thank you guys for the Q&A shows that you've participated in, all the questions that you sent. Keep them coming. 2018 may see a shift in format for the Q&A shows. Not a ton of people watch them, and I want to capture more audience for these shows. Of course, there is the audio-only version, which the numbers are growing very, very well. I'm very happy. Thank you guys for the support on the audio platforms. If you want to support the show, check out the crew membership. I've talked about it a ton. Down below is a link. Got a Patreon as well, or use my Amazon link. I link up a ton of really great stuff in every video. You guys hit that link, buy your stuff. I get a tiny bit of credit through your affiliate program from that, and it costs you nothing extra, which is my favorite part. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, Snapchat. If you're listening on the audio only version, head over to iTunes. Give it a review. If you think it's worth five, awesome. Not okay, that's cool too. Tell me what you think it's worth. If you're watching, give that video a thumbs up, hit the share button. Don't forget to subscribe. If you want updates for new videos, you can ding the notification bell. If you're not interested and just want to come by when you want, that's cool too. I got no problem with it. Either way, I appreciate you guys hanging out with me, spending your very busy life with me, hopefully learning about cars and becoming part of this really awesome community. All right, guys, that's it. I'm done. Thank you so much for the awesome Q&A shows for 2017. And you know what? I'll have more videos coming out, but I won't see you on the Q&A show till 2018.